Welcome to the Debate at GO8 podcast series exploring issues and research affecting the Group of Eight universities and by extension Australia's economy and our society. Today we'll be examining Australia's emerging relationship with India with Lisa Singh, the CEO of the Australia India Institute. It's a leading research and policy think tank advancing relations between the two countries at government, business and academic levels. Lisa is a former Australian senator and the first woman of South Asian heritage to be elected to the Australian Parliament. Prior to her time as a senator, she was a Tasmanian MP and a minister in the Tasmanian government. She has a deep knowledge of the Indian diaspora as the deputy chair of the Australian government's Australia-India Council, and she also sits on the advisory board of the University of Melbourne's AsiaLink. Hello, I'm Ron Candelars, freelance journalist and producer, and throughout this series, we've been canvassing a range of topics, touching upon the work of all the Group of Eight universities. They include the Australian National University, Monash University, UNSW Sydney, the Universities of Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney, Queensland and Western Australia. With me in the studio is Vicky Thompson, the CEO of the Group of Eight Universities, who has recently returned from a trip to India earlier this year. Lisa Singh, you've had a fascinating and varied career to date. You were the first woman of Indian heritage to be elected to the Australian Parliament, and you've been a state politician, an advocate for human rights and Australia-India relations. When you look back over your career, you'd have to say it's provided the ideal experience for your current role as CEO of the Australia-India Institute, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely. I'm very privileged to be in this role because not only do I bring to it, obviously, all of that career history to date, but also there's just so much energy right now in the Australia-India relationship. So I do sort of feel like I'm in the right place at the right time. But bring with me, as you say, some of the skills and the knowledge and the understanding of both the political and the government scene to the role, which I think is very important because at the moment, both governments, Australia and India, are really engaged, and to be able to tap into some of that sort of understanding of how government works and my, deep passion for the relationship as well is certainly helpful. But, the Australia-India Institute, it's been around since before my time, so I'm the third person to lead this institute, but the first woman. But very excited to be there at this point in time when there is just so much in terms of research collaboration, in terms of security, trade, so much for the relationship to really take on and take forward with.
You talk about this energy currently. Why has it suddenly taken off to the extent that it has? Because it's been in the papers a lot. There's been, missions between governments, et cetera. We saw the recent visit of our Prime Minister to India. Why has it taken to another level, do you think?
To first answer that, I have to say that, during my 8 years in the Senate, I was really flying the India flag. But to be honest, there wasn't a huge amount of interest. And, we obviously were very much banking on our very strong trading relationship with China at that time. If we look at the university sector, of course, Chinese international students were our main cohort. There just wasn't as much interest in India over the past, until the last decade, or at least until the last 5 years. Obviously, that all changed geopolitically over the last few years. So in that sense, you could say that the Australia-India relationship's time has come because of some of those geopolitical challenges we're facing in the region. But I think really also there was some behind-the-scenes work going on at the political and government level in Australia. One of those, of course, we can get into being Peter Varghese's India Economic Strategy, launched in 2018, I think. That blueprint really did set out a really strong foundation as to why Australia should be engaging a lot more with India. But I think at the same time, India itself, right, it's a developing country that's economy just started to really open up. Now, that started in the early 90s when it started to liberalise, but it really has taken off in the last decade. And finally, I'm pleased that, business leaders, government leaders have really recognised the importance of that. So, our trading relationship, having said that, is still minuscule compared to what it is with China. But now that we have a sort of interim free trade agreement and a commitment to have a full free trade agreement, that need is there. But the other thing I think is that India itself has also recognised Australia. You know, India has this incredible demographic dividend of nearly half of its population being under the age of 25. I heard an interesting fact the other day from Minister Murray Watt when he was there visiting as part of his role as agricultural minister. He said that there are the same number of 17-year-olds in India as there is the Australian population.
I think there's something like, isn't there, like 1 million Indians turn 18 every month? Was there an incredible statistic, which means there's a lot of energy and passion and drive that we can actually tap into.
And also, Vicky, a need in terms of all of those young Indians to be educated. You know, there's one thing very clear about Indian culture and having my own father drum this into me, it's the importance of education. So, you know, you've got this incredible demographic dividend of young Indians needing to skill up, to be educated, and Australia obviously offering, you know, really quality, high quality education institutions to be able to support and deliver on that.
So let's just go to that. And I have to say, Lisa herself has brought, we are in a moment in time, and all of those things you said are right, but you have brought an incredible energy to the Australia India Institute. And it's really pivoted, I think, and developed into, I think, sort of the catalyst to enable the relationship to go to that next level. So she's just, you know, pat yourself on the back. You're doing an awesome job. But in terms of the education and research space, I mean, we've been, you know, actually Group of Eight universities have had research collaborations which go back decades, but at a very small level. But if we look at our numbers across the Group of Eight, and I'm talking just university students here, obviously, not the broader numbers, we have around 11,000 Indian students across eight universities, mm-hmm. compared to about 135,000 Chinese students. So there is a huge gap, huge opportunity, but even so, even with this renewed vigour, and it'll take time, I understand that, we've still got a long way to go. So I'd be interested, Lisa, given your vast experience, not just with the India Institute, Australia India Institute, just your observations on why you think those numbers are small, because that quality market have gone traditionally, I think, to the US and the UK and not to Australia. And is it realistic to think that we can actually grow that number of that cohort to the same level over a period of time?
It's a really hard question, that one, in terms of why those figures aren't better and aren't what they are, what they should be, particularly when we just talked about the demographic dividend that India provides. But I think at the same time, we need to recognise that we haven't really as a nation been putting ourselves out there for very long on India. You know, it's still relatively early days compared to, as we say, our very long-standing trading relationship with China. We've had a free trade agreement with China for a very long time now. But since we had that India economic strategy say that, you know, the education sector is our major, major pillar, our major sort of, you know, trading sort of opportunity with India, that's sort of really elevated things in the purview of both countries. Having said that, on the India side, yes, you're right, they have looked at the Northern Hemisphere, so to speak, as, you know, those sort of very well established US and UK institutions as the sort of the premier institutions to aim towards. But of course, those institutions can't take every Indian student, when there are so many. And this is where we really need, and particularly the Group of Eight, need to say, well, we also are prestigious and we are offering the best quality education. And I think those delegations with the education minister really help drive that message home. I think, of course, there are other areas in which we can provide further sorts of different sort of models of delivering education too. For example, the University of Melbourne has got a new blended science undergraduate degree where they've partnered with five universities in India to deliver half of the degree there and then the rest of it in Australia. Those sorts of new models and new ways of looking at how we can really tap into India is another way I think we need to address this. But I think getting back to the fact that now we do see, as a political organisation, as government, we see India as a first-tier economic partner, you know, that the importance of actually delivering on those figures has to improve. It really does. And I think all of these bilateral meetings, all of these areas of engagement that we're seeing, we've obviously hosted the Indian Education Minister here as well this year. So all of that didn't used to happen. Mm. You know, we've just had Prime Minister Modi here for the second time, you know, in a decade. Before that, it was something like 25 years before an Indian Prime Minister visited this country. So I just still think we're in early days in terms of this sort of newfound strength between our two countries. But yes, we do need to really continue the momentum. And that's where organisations like ours at the Australia India Institute, supporting government, supporting business and academia, need to play a really important role. And yeah, that does require a lot of energy, Vicky.
So. It does. Well, you've got it. You're the girl for the job.
just one other issue, Lisa, because we spoke recently with Peter Varghese, the UQ Chancellor, and he made a point that one of the things that needs a rethink too is the level of investment by Australian companies in India. Mm. You know, rather than seeing India as an opportunity only for students to come here and to, you know, to bring that resource here, we have to make a commitment. Australian business has to make some sort of commitment long term to invest in Indian companies and Indian businesses. So that sort of thing is a game changer as well, isn't it?
It is. And unfortunately, I'm sure Peter would have highlighted this, that investment is still relatively low. You know, we're not seeing enough Australian businesses at this point in time make that leap to invest. And I think some of that really does come back to an understanding of each other as two nations. You know, I think at the business leader level, even at the political leader level, in certain degrees, there is still a misunderstanding or a lack of understanding about India and about the fact that it's the fifth largest economy in the world, that the demographic dividend that it holds in terms of opportunity, you know, where it's headed, the sort of liberalisation path it's going down, its call for more foreign direct investment and all of that. I think a lot of learning still needs to go on what, you know, I tend to call India literacy. And then on the same side, that needs to also happen in India on Australia. There's a lot of Indian leaders, and be it a business, political, all sorts of different levels, that really don't understand Australia and where we're headed and sort of how we're projecting ourselves in the Indo-Pacific region. So I think there's still a lot of work to be done at various levels to make sure that we do actually connect and understand the opportunities for each other as two nations in this region and how we want to shape it.
How do you think we build this, as you say, India literacy? How do we create a greater knowledge of within Australian companies of how you do business in India?
Well, look, it needs to happen on all sorts of levels. I mean, for us as an organisation, one of the areas we really strongly sort of work in, we've got four different program areas, but one of our biggest is in international education. And I really think that it's what those people-to-people links that we create out of that are so important. So, for example, one of the programs we just recently delivered on behalf of the Australian government was the Australia-India Research Students Fellowships Program. Now, this is a fantastic exchange of students from Australia going to India for 8 weeks and vice versa. We had 28 Australians and we had 35 Indian research students, or, you know, early career researchers. I have to say 59% of them were women, which was great. Going to 22 Australian universities, collaborating with 37 Indian higher education institutions. That experience they have through that research is life-changing. You know, when they go to each other's countries and make those people-to-people connections, that's going to change their lives in terms of wanting to have an engagement with India into the future. And so the same thing needs to happen at the business level as well and the political level, to have that really deep grounded experience in India and have that exposure to the sorts of stakeholders that they need to connect with to drive things closer and further. I do remember that, you know, once held a a sort of panel discussion with Jennifer Westacott from the Business Council of Australia and the former Trade Minister Dan Tehan when they were launching through us the update of the India Economic Strategy. And one of the things that Jennifer said, and it really stuck with me in terms of business, is that any Australian business going into India needs a local partner. Mm. It needs to find that local partner on the ground to be able to navigate, because the way India works, it's very much about trust. It's about relationships. You know, it's not just sort of a transactional sort of thing, which perhaps it might be with other countries. You can't just sort of take the model of trade engagement with one country and just plant it and think it'll work with India. India is I often call it a country of countries. You know, it's so diverse. So many different languages, different cultures, all within the one country. So, you know, you really need to have that sort of local partner that can help connect with you in terms of a business sense on the ground.
Do you think also, given what we've seen with, you talked about the fraught geopolitical situation currently, do you think that opens up many more options as, you know, Australia has this more testy relationship with China, that we start to see the need for more defence links, more defence cooperation with India? Do you think that opens up a whole range of different industries as well?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, Ron, you've really hit the nail on the head in terms of defence, because when we talk about defence, there's a whole industry that's behind it. Defence tech is obviously one part of that. So we're doing two policy dialogues actually in the next couple of months, specifically focused on the defence industry opportunities for Australia and India, and also looking at how Australia and India can support our small island states. For Australia, of course, our Pacific neighbours are very much part of that. But for India, it also supports, you know, small island states in the Indian Ocean. So both countries, again, in a maritime security sense, in a broader security sense, in terms of climate change, for example, have a lot to share and support each other on in really looking at how we can make our region peace and prosperous and stable. So I think definitely that the time has come for this relationship at the security level. And yes, some of the drivers of that, of course, have been that, you know, unstable or challenging factor that has come about, particularly for India. You know, it shares a border with China, and there's been, you know, it's obviously disputes there. But also for us in Australia, we've obviously had economic sanctions on us, and we've need to look for new markets in that regard. But for whatever the reasons, I think this should have happened ages ago, right? I think the Australia-India relationship, we're two democracies, we've got lots of shared interests, and, you know, the education sector is clearly, to me, the big hallmark as part of those interests.
Mm. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it, that when you think about it, it has taken this long, and I wonder whether it's just because we've been sort of the broad we, a little lazy, you know, business, industry, all of us, mm-hmm. because it's been easy. I mean, it hasn't been easy, but, you know, the work's been done. But China's such a big market in so many areas, not just in students, not just for universities, but as a trading partner, that we've been complacent, I guess, is probably a better word. And we've looked at India only in the context of, dare I say, we hear this a lot, you know, cricket and curry. Mm. And not looked at it as an absolute powerhouse of innovation and technology, which it is. And also, I guess, not looking at it as just a one-way traffic. Yeah. You know, what can we do for India? Well, hello. There's actually a whole lot of, you know, bilateral partnerships that should and must happen.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And look, I think some of that is, you know, it's been put to me a number of times, I'm sure. You've heard it too, Vicky, that, you know, oh, India's just too hard to do business in. I don't know how to go about it. You know, it is a very diverse country, but so is Australia.
Yeah.
You know, we are an incredibly diverse country. That's something that we share as two nations. And I think that's part of our strength. You know, we can look at India at the state level. I know that, you know, Victoria has an India strategy. Queensland just this week has launched an India strategy. So, you know, clearly at the state level, we can see engagement and connecting up again at the state levels in India as well. But some of this, I think, is also about providing the right sort of frameworks or foundations so that business and our higher ed institutions and politicians can actually come together and figure out how we can drive a deeper relationship. One of the things we do at the Australia India Institute to make that happen is we, as you know, Vicky, you were there last year, we host the Australia India Leadership Dialogue.
Yeah.
Now, that is a really premier forum for informal diplomacy between Australia and India, multi-stakeholder, 50 or 60 delegates that are business leaders, you know, cabinet ministers and thought leaders in academia and civil society that really come together to address some of these shared challenges, but also the opportunities to explore cooperation. And we will host that again this year in Melbourne on the 23rd of November, you know, to really sort of see if we can continue to drive that deeper mutual understanding, but also address things like we've talked about today, regional security, promoting business and commercial opportunities. And all of that, of course, means we really strengthen our people-to-people links.
Yeah, I was really fortunate to be part of the Australia-India Leadership Dialogue that Lisa's just mentioned. And you have got absolute captains of industry from both sides, ministers, et cetera, she talked about. But what I found really fantastic about it is we had an opportunity to drill down to some of the levels of detail that we're talking about. So this was beyond just having a chat about, you know, we're important, you're important, and we all go away and we feel better about each other. But we had sessions around cybersecurity and agriculture and obviously education. I found myself being able to kind of insert us into most of those conversations because to go right back to your earlier point, the research and education partnerships are sometimes I think we dismiss that as soft diplomacy, people to people, but that is actually what is going to underpin and power up the ongoing partnership.
Yeah.
Because if you get, for example, the researchers that you talked about, the 50-odd researchers that you're supporting, they then do actual research projects, but they then have a different understanding of the two countries. So it sounds small and it sounds insignificant when we're talking about the scale.
Yeah.
But you actually, from my perspective at least, you have to start somewhere, and that's where you start at that people-to-people, deep business discussions as we have through the dialogue.
Yeah.
Those things are really important. And the Australia India Institute is kind of the leader in that regard.
And I'm sure those things become lifelong relationships. You know, when researchers meet over a period of time and then they keep travelling to
but
each other's countries.
But businesses too, Ron. Business as well. I mean, we had Mike Cannon-Brooks was co-hosting it with Lisa and with Atlassian. You know, they are major employers both in Australia and in India. And so getting the calibre of those sorts of people and their equivalents, you then build an understanding back into our business community. And again, that's about people. He needs to employ people here. He needs to employ people in India. I mean, so you can't under sort of estimate the value of that. And then on top of that, what you've got, as you've quite rightly said, is this moment in time, which is what Peter Varghese basically said. There's been people like Lisa and Peter sitting in the background working, you know, and lots of other people. But there is now, for a whole host of reasons, an absolute moment in time where I think the opportunity is ours to lose if we don't grasp it.
Absolutely, Vicky. I think that's exactly right. And, you know, we aren't the only country that's interested in engaging with India. In fact, I think we're a little bit late to the table.
Yeah.
I think this is where it is important that we have these sorts of dialogues and we have the best and the brightest at the table. You know, that dialogue focused on technology is an overarching theme and will again this year because Atlassian have come on board again and really want to support it. But, you know, technology is ubiquitous. I mean, it crosses so much of our lives. And therefore, the sessions that we were talking about at that dialogue, I mean, some of it, I have to say, went over the top of my head. But, you know, when we're talking about green hydrogen and, you know, some of those opportunities for us to really reach our net zero emissions.
Well, we had Andrew Forrest pop in, didn't we?
we did, rather.
Yeah.
So, you know, but the research collaboration that comes out of, say, just looking at climate change or looking at cybersecurity, you know, looking at how we deliver services in this post-pandemic world, you know, med tech, ed tech, fintech. I mean, India is doing so much in this space. So there's stuff for us to learn as well and collaborate on. And, you know, the fact that it's a country with, what, 100 unicorns and growing. I mean, we don't have quite that startup culture here in Australia, but I see it changing.
Yeah.
You know, and we've also got Indian tech companies that have really now embedded themselves here in Australia. You know, Infosys, TCS, HCL, Wipro, these are Indian companies in Australia employing our grads to really sort of make impact here. So that's a great, you know, opportunity for connection. But that therein lies an issue as well, because I know that some of the issues those companies have here, and also I think for Atlassian, I think Mike's raised this himself, is this issue of workforce mobility.
Yeah.
And I think probably some of that comes down to student mobility as well. I know that the Prime Minister signed an MOU looking at some of these issues of mobility, but they are ongoing issues. I know that we face them sometimes at the Institute when we've got these research grants or fellowships to give out. Then there are, you know, issues in terms of students getting their visas in time to be able to come to our country and deliver.
Lisa, just on that, another issue that did emerge some years ago was the issue of, you know, how Indian students were treated on campus here in Australia, and there were some significant incidents that didn't reflect well on Australia. How do you think we've handled that in the last few years, the, you know, allegations of racism for Indian students coming to this country?
Yeah, look, that 2009 event in Melbourne is still the sort of marker that's raised right at the, you know, the highest of political levels. We do not want to go back to that. I don't see that myself or with the Indian students that I engage with being anything like, you know, an issue in terms of racism anymore. But that's not to say that it doesn't exist because, you know, we only know what we know. For us, though, I think at the Institute, we have a role to play in this. I'm really pleased that I actually employ a number of Indian students here in Australia that are still completing their master's degrees and the like, and I learn so much from them. They connect us, of course, to those Indian student groups as well that do a lot to support each other. We also give out bursaries at the Institute for Indian students suffering financial hardship. So, look, I take that whole space really seriously and think that we definitely need to do more to make sure that it's not just about, of course, wanting Indian students to come to our universities and get a high-quality education and obviously be full fee-paying in the process, but it's actually also about their well-being and ensuring that they feel part of the broader Australian multicultural fabric of our, you know, our society. So having our sort of chai and samosa afternoons that occasionally we had them recently with our Australia India Research Students Fellowships. Hearing their stories about their 8 weeks here in Australia was really uplifting. You know, most of them are first time students. They've never been to Australia before. And, you know, they're navigating all sorts of things, public transport to, you know,
well, certainly, there's certainly, and time's sort of against us, but I just wanted to wrap things up by getting your impressions. Vicky mentioned before about maybe the relationship had been a bit cliched. You know, it was about cricket and curry, and we need to have a much more nuanced, intelligent, sophisticated view about India. How do we get the Australian populace to take on that view, but also Australian business and all of our Australian universities to embrace India for the real opportunities, long-term opportunities that it provides?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, we'll never completely move away from cricket and curry, and I don't really want us to move away from cricket, of course. I mean,
I don't want to move away from curry.
No.
Yeah, I mean, that they are major pieces of glue, I think, that really do bond us. But we do need to go beyond that, and Vicky's right to say that. We do need to have more of a relationship of substance. You know, I think some of that, of course, is happening through our growing Indian diaspora where they host their festivals of Diwali and Holi, and they're just so colourful. And so many more Australians in the broader Australian community want to be a part of those festivals. So that's a lot of fun and a lot of way of sort of educating each other about about our two nations and the cultural differences. But I think our Indian diaspora is still an untapped asset that we have here. You know, they've chosen to make Australia their home, but they carry both countries and both sort of cultures within them in that process. So, you know, learning a lot more from them and you know, activities like that we do and other, you know, Indian diaspora organisations are doing can help in that regard too. Mm.
Well, thanks so much for your insights today and keep up the great work at the Australia India Institute. It's been fascinating chatting with you today. Thank you for your time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Lisa.
Thanks for your company today. If you'd like more information about the issues raised in this podcast or other related topics, please visit our website at go8.edu.au. And a quick reminder that you can always tune in to the debate at Go8 on Spotify, Google, Apple, or YouTube. Bye for now.